S-R-N.
Welcome to Cinema Crespo Diso, episode 14. It is me, Christopher Crespo, film critic, writer, painter of homes, waxer of floors, whatever else I do in the Karate Kid. With me, as always, number two man, Ed McMahon, to my Johnny Carson, Drewster Cogburn.
What up?
And special guest this week, fellow film critic extraordinaire, Aaron Weiss.
Hello, everyone.
How's it going, Aaron?
Doing well.
Aaron Weiss is from cinemafunk.com, right? So we'll remember that now. We'll remind you again later that you want to check out cinemafunk.com for some great reviews. And also cinemafunk on the Twitter.
Yes.
At cinemafunk. And Facebook. And just Google search cinemafunk.
You type in cinemafunk, you'll probably find one of the many
many things, yes. Yep. So Aaron's in town for the Florida Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
You got yourself a press pass, one of these press pass carrying gentlemen.
Very shiny.
We got one of those too.
Oh yeah, that's right, we did. Ain't that cool? Aren't we a special group of guys?
Yes, we are.
All those jealous people out there. Press is the last one to get into any screening.
That
so.
Is true.
Oh god, it's so terrible.
If it's sold out, we're not getting in.
Nope.
So you're in town for that, which is really cool. We just recorded a bonus episode talking about all the films we saw at the Florida Film Festival. So if you're interested in that stuff, please go ahead and download the bonus episode. And if you're not interested in that stuff, download it anyway, because we need the numbers. We need the hits. We need the stats. But it's good stuff, though. I think you'll really enjoy what we talked about in there. But we're going to do a normal episode 14. So thank you very much, Aaron, for recording both with us.
Mm-hmm.
We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
It's a lot of podcasting.
It is a lot of podcasting. It's a podcast day is what it is.
Podcast-a-rama.
Podcast-a-rama. So the format of the show, real quick, we're going to do a box office review of all the movies that just came out this weekend. We are going to look at the new movies coming out on DVD and in theaters. We're going to get into the Crespo Disco and get down a little bit and do a little bit of jamming. Then we're going to get into the Crespo Dome, where anything can happen.
You got to choose your weapon wisely.
It's wild in the Crespo
Dome.
It's
crazy, man.
But before we do that, we're going to do the Netflix Instant Pick of the Week. That's the Netflix Instant Randomizer 9000.
Some very interesting technology here.
It is.
We're in the future.
Oh, I get to pick.
And you get to pick as the guest. You get to pick this week's Netflix Instant Pick of the Week.
Archie's final product or project.
Hey, we were just talking about that.
We just talked about that about two seconds ago.
Okay, buddy.
Oh, when I put it back in.
And Andrew put it back in so it can be picked again. Let me just double check real quick to make sure that it's on the Netflix. Yes, it's still on there, because you know how sometimes they take the movies down.
They're all in rotation.
They're in rotation. Arnie's final project is definitely still on there. That's one that we saw. I saw that at Florida Film Festival, not last year, but the year before.
2010.
Yes, it was 2010. And that one is about a kid who he's doing a film project for school, and he says he's going to record his own suicide, and everything building up to a suicide, and it's all about how this middle class, kind of, you know, well-to-do white kid with seemingly a normal family, and seemingly he has everything that you would want. He still feels adrift and alone and confused and suicidal. And, you know, it's just kind of a real look at a teenager with these problems and the hormones and everything he wants and doesn't want.
Especially in our modern age.
Yes, with media saturation and the way he records his whole process and edits it together. And he's referencing movies and so many other things. And then it's like a mix, too, of there's digital photography, but then there's animation.
There's a lot of fantastic animation.
Yeah, the way it comes in and out, like he recreates scenes from Deer Hunter and stuff. And, you know, yeah, it's actually pretty cool. Only thing I have against the movie, it's very cinema verite in that it seems like it's all very real until what's his name shows up to Montana.
Yes, Tony Montana. No,
that's why I don't want to say. You know what I'm talking about, though. Not Joe Mantegna.
Yeah.
Joe Mantegna. Because I want to say Joe Montana. Joe Mantegna shows up as an Indian psychiatrist, with accents and brown face and everything.
And you're just like, okay.
Oh my
it's
goodness.
It's also one of the last roles for David Carradine.
That's right.
Yeah. Rich, who strangely
he plays some crazy poet named Vargas, who's all about death.
And, hey, guess what?
And then, and then he dies.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh boy.
But of course, we Carradine's death was golf was accidental and not.
Sure it was.
Yeah. So, accidental.
Sure.
Autoerotic asphyxiation is totally accident.
He went the NXS route.
Yes.
Yeah.
But also, for those who may not know, you may have heard the film was originally called My Suicide.
Yes. Yes.
And of course, it was changed to RG's Final
Project.
RG's
Final Project. Probably because the My Suicide title wasn't sitting well with distributors or whatever.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't sit well with anybody.
And maybe, yeah. Maybe after they changed it to RG's Final Project, all of a sudden it's like, hey, Netflix wants this movie now. So now it's on the Netflix instant. And I highly recommend it. It's a great, great little independent film. Just good stuff.
It is, you know, very relevant topic, stuff we still see on, you know, news, children, just so much bullying or just disconnected from their lives and just deciding to end it. So definitely check it out.
Absolutely. We're all in agreement on that one. So, hey, good pick, Aaron. Good pick. I'm gonna write that down.
It was the, what was it called? The Netflix Picker 9000?
Netflix Instant Randomizer 9000.
It's the Crespo Disso Randomizer 9000.
I could not have done it without this advanced technology.
It is. Oh, yeah, no, seriously. Yeah, we've got some crazy scientists making wicked stuff for us.
I mean, look at it. It's, and then it's decorated with a teddy bear receiving the gift of a puppy.
Correct.
Greatest thing ever.
Christmas blessings.
RG's Final Project. Check that out. It's a 2009 film. We saw it in 2010 Florida Film Festival. Now it's available on Netflix in 2013.
Hooray for progress.
Pick of the week. Here we go now into the box office for the weekend. True, you got the box office.
Oh,
from,
do I ever,
from
Chris.
The old box office mojo.com.
Yes, sir. Why are you plugging them? They're not paying us.
No, I'm just letting people know where we're getting our information from. That's all.
Okay.
I'm just referencing our sources.
We're pulling this out of our ass.
Yeah, we're not pulling this out of our ass.
All right. Well, this week
people
at
number
13. We have Trance, which made $925,000
on 438 screens.
Correct, for a total gross of just over a million.
Just over a million. Not bad. Not bad. I couldn't find a budget for this one. Budget unavailable. It looks like it probably cost them about 30 million pounds.
And Chris knows because
it's British.
Because he saw this movie.
Well, I saw this movie. I saw it yesterday. Man, this is a pretty wild movie.
This is one of those movies I wish I'd seen.
Yeah, you do wish you had seen this one. James McAvoy plays, he works at an auction house, and he's an auctioneer, and it's a place that specializes in paintings. And then there's a heist. Vincent Cassell leads a group of guys to steal this painting. James McAvoy takes it and goes through the ritual to secure the painting before it gets stolen. But then it turns out like the painting isn't where it's supposed to be, and then he gets a head injury and he can't remember where he put it. So he has to go to like a hypnotherapist to try to remember where he hid this painting because he can't remember. And I'm trying to be as vague as possible because this story gets twisted and crazy
and convoluted.
A little convoluted. There's scenes where it gets to a point where James McAvoy's character, you're not even sure. You purposefully, you're not sure what's a trance, what's a hypnotic state, and what's really happening. What is he sort of remembering? And what's
so it's a very unreliable narrator.
It is a very unreliable narrator because he is the narrator and he's going through hypnosis the whole time. So it's kind of like Domino, where she's telling a story, but the whole time she's on amphetamines.
Yeah.
So her story is all crazy and over the top. So his story is really twisted and weird. But then by the end, it all comes together. And it makes sense. And things, you know, it's not just being weird for the sake of being weird. There is a reason for it. And some of it is kind of telegraphed. Some of it caught me by surprise. But in the end, I thought it was really good. Danny Boyle, you know, I mean, I'm a big fan.
He makes great movies.
28 Days Later, 127 Hours, Trainspotting. I mean, guy knows what's up. Even
millions.
You know, even stuff like even sentimental stuff like Millions and Slumdog Millionaire. He's pretty good at pulling off. You know. He really does have two modes too. He has like sentimental, I'm gonna make a nice movie for the whole family, and then he has, I'm gonna make a movie about a guy that has to chop off his own arm, or I'm gonna make a movie, you know, I'm gonna go crazy with this stuff.
He is a manipulator in the Spielberg sense.
Yeah, he knows what works, he knows what strings to push. He at least four times in Trance, he does the thing where he does it at the beginning of 28 Days Later, where the music is ramping up and it's ramping up, and before you know it, it's like loud, clanging, crazy music, and the scene crescendos, and it goes, and it ends, and you know, the scene ends. Yeah. He does that at least four times in Trance.
Nice.
Which, you know, first time I was like, all right, it's cool. Second time I was like, I get it. Third time I was like, all right, okay, dude, that's cool. And then the fourth time I was like, dude.
Come on, bro.
Come on, dude. But I'd still recommend it. I would say, you know, if you are a Danny Boyle fan, our rating system is how much would you spend money on it? Would you go see it?
Would you see it in theaters? Would you buy it on the in-demand?
Would you see it on the Redbox?
Would
you wait for it to be on HBO? That's our rating system. Yeah. So for Trance, if you're a Danny Boyle fan, if you're into weird movies like this, I would definitely say go see it in the theater. If you're not sure what you're getting yourself into, if you see the trailer, you're like, I don't know, then wait for Redbox, because it is, I could see some people not liking it just because it is pretty stylized and the story goes places where it could be easily seemed deemed silly.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm sure.
People be like, oh, that's just ridiculous. But yeah, I was into it. I enjoyed it. So I would recommend Trance for sure, either theaters or Redbox in demand. Another one that I think it was Kevin that pointed out on a previous episode. We have to add On an Airplane.
Oh, yes.
Because a lot of times people see movies on airplanes. Is it worth maybe just wait till you're on a plane trip and then see it on an airplane? So that's one that we have to add our scale. All right, so Trance. Number 13, I recommend it. It's only on 438 theaters, so I'm sure it'll be in more theaters soon, so more people will get a chance to go see it. Hopefully. Knock on wood.
No, right. At number 10 this week, we have The Place Beyond the Pines that had a weekend gross of $4 million. It's only in 514 screens and has a total gross of $5.4 million and a budget of $15.
Not bad. Not bad. Definitely low-budget movie. $15 million is, you know, it's kind of higher for an independent film, but it's still a low-budget movie. It's a character-based drama. It's very much about... I saw this in Trance back-to-back, and they are very much opposite movies. Trance is about the plot. You know, it's high melodrama in that it's about the machinations of the plot and what characters are doing to each other in terms of, you know, like, they're very broad strokes betraying each other, love each other, blah, blah. Place Beyond the Pines is much more nuanced, much more character-based. It's, you know, a dirtbag carny played by Ryan Gosling, so he's obviously the best looking carny in the world. He, you know, going town to town, he has flings all over the place. In this one particular town, it's connected to New York, he has a fling with a girl, Eva Mendes, that results in a baby. Then he finds out he has a kid and he wants to be there for the kid, but she doesn't want him there necessarily. She has a she's living with another man who's raising the kid as his own. So there's a lot of tension there, and the movie's kind of episodic in that the first third of the film is about Ryan Gosling wanting to be a dad to this little baby, not having any options, and then being presented with the option of robbing banks, and that's how he can get some money for his kid. That story then gives way to Bradley Cooper's cop character, because he becomes the one that's like, he has to investigate what happens, sort of like he's in on what happens with Ryan Gosling, and then it becomes his story. Then he has his own family, his own son, and his own father, and it's about how he's trying to impress his father, and he wants to have a life for his son, blah, blah, blah. And then that cuts to like 15 years later, and then it's about these two kids growing up, and it's the next generation of these families, and it's crazy, dude.
Wow.
It's very epic. It's
that's
2 hours.
Interesting.
It's 2 hours and 20 minutes. It feels it. You feel the 220, but it's because it's so character-based, it's kind of slow.
Yeah.
It takes its time. It's developing these people. And they're not characters, they're people. You know, they're actual, they feel like real people in this movie. And it's all really well acted. Ryan Gosling, Eva Mendes, Ben Mendelsohn, the Australian fellow, who's now, he's in everything now, Killing Them Softly and whatever. Who else? Bradley Cooper's great. Rose Byrne plays his wife, I believe. She's very good. The guys that they got to play the kids, one of them is the grown-up kid, Dane DeHaan. the kid from Chronicle. The guy,
okay,
the one who was like the super villain kid in Chronicle.
Right,
and then he also was
in a few things recently.
He was in Lawless after that, where he played like the mousy character. In this one, he plays Ryan Gosling's son, grown up.
Okay.
And it's a very interesting performance. I like that kid. I think he's a pretty good actor. And then the guy that got to play the other kid, he's kind of a meathead. It's pretty funny, actually. He almost comes across as a non-actor. You know, I don't know. It's interesting. But I really, really like the movie. It's really well directed. The story is very well told. Mike Patton of Faith No More, Mr. Bungle, he does the score.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
That alone
is worth it. Maybe I should mention that at the top. Mike Patton does the score. And it's a great score. It's very traditional, but it's subdued, but he's great at like heightening tension just without you really noticing that the music's in the background. I mean, I noticed it because I love Mike Patton, so I wanted to hear what he was going to do. But but none of it is in your face. It's all very, very well done.
So it's an appropriate score.
Absolutely.
Done by a very inappropriate person.
Yes.
That's awesome.
this guy has his musical hooks and everything now. He's done everything from like crazy funk metal to opera.
Yeah.
So, you know, why not throw musical scores in there? And he's always been fascinated with musical scores. Phantomas. his band Phantomasa. Phantomasa is a movie.
Mr. Bungle.
You know, it's very, very all over the place. I love Mr. Bungle so much, man. And great score, great film. I highly recommend Place Beyond the Pines. This is one where I say, if you're really interested in good filmmaking, really good storytelling, this is one where you got to go see it in the theater. See it as fast as you can when you get the chance. When you see it on the red box, you know, jump on it. Check it out. I think a lot of people are really, really going to like it. It's really, really well acted. Some people are going to think it's too long because it is 220, and just the nature of the story, it stretches so far, you know, that it's like, oh my goodness, is this thing going to end anytime soon? But I think it has a great ending. I love where it goes. So that's one I highly recommend. Both those films, actually. Trance, Please Beyond the Pines. All right, what else we got, Drew?
All right, number five this week, we have Evil Dead, which had a weekend gross of $9.5 million, total gross of $41.5 on a budget of $17.
The Evil Dead remake doing pretty good financially.
Yeah. Well, people like being scared out of their pants.
They do. And apparently this one's pretty effective.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing.
You know, I have no interest in this
movie. I really don't care about this movie at all.
I'm intrigued because, of course, I'm so interested in the people that, of course,
right.
I can just... But I know I'm going to be disappointed.
But there's no Bruce Campbell.
Are you? Yeah, and they
there's
don't...
There's no Bruce Campbell.
And
come on.
Maybe the smart thing is, too, that they don't try to come up with a replacement.
Yeah.
There is no Ash character. Yeah, the characters are different characters. They didn't try to come up with an Ash. That was probably a smart thing on their behalf. I keep reading about how incredibly violent this movie is, you know? And it's supposed to be one of the goriest, craziest R-rated movies in forever. And I don't know if I can't really take that anymore, man. Just reading descriptions of what happens in a movie, just reading the descriptions online makes me, like, turns my stomach a little. I'm like, oh, I don't want to see this.
That's interesting.
Or hear it, you know?
Yeah.
That's interesting because Evil Dead, even when they tried to re-release it on DVD, still kept getting an NC-17 rating.
Which is weird because...
Yeah.
It's really strange. Even
but it's
kind of...
I don't know. It's so campy. You can't give it an NC-17
Yeah, the first
rating.
One... Even the first one comes across as campy and humorous. I know the first one was supposed to be more serious... The second one is more humorous, but watching the first one now, it still comes across as a little goofy, you know, which is fun. I really like that stuff, and apparently this one has none of that. There is no humor whatsoever. They went deadly serious, and I don't know. I think it might just be a little too much for me.
So what do you recommend?
I haven't seen it. If you are a fan of horror and like really, really wet, gross horror, then this is the movie for you because it has everything in terms of like big, nasty amputations and hooks and faces and, you know, people cutting themselves and no thank you. Stuff that I'm not really into.
I might wait for the Dollar Theater.
Dollar Theater is always a great option.
Oh yeah,
we never talk about it. Maybe we should be adding Dollar Theater to
I'm not a fan of those sticky floors.
The floors are always so sticky. Bring an extra pair of shoes
every time. Alright, number four this week we have G.I. Joe Retaliation, which had a weekend gross of $10.8 million, total gross of $102.5 and a budget of $130.
What a hunk of shit this movie
was. It was
what a boring hunk
of
shit.
It was garbage.
I hate it,
but whatever, we saw it.
We
reviewed it, what, like 3 weeks ago, something like that.
Yeah, whenever it came out, we saw it a few weeks ago. Did not like it. I didn't even like the first one that much, but I still prefer the first one because at least it was cartoony and fun, and this one was, it just took itself so seriously. It's like it's a G.I. Joe movie, guys.
It's based on a toy.
It's
come on.
Brought to you by Hasbro, but no, we're going to take this with definitely seriousness. Like, oh, you guys, I don't know you guys.
Agreed.
I don't want to spend any more time on three.
All right, well, number three this week, we have The Croods, which had a weekend gross of $13.2 million, total gross of $142.5 on a budget of $135.
Are you an animation film fan, Aaron?
I used to be.
Yeah.
Not so much anymore. I feel like they've all become very homogenized.
Right, even the Pixar stuff?
Even the Pixar stuff.
They're going through a slate now where it's all sequels. They're starting their sequel-heavy slate.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, I guess maybe they started out with Cars 2 already, but then they have Monsters University.
Of course, there was Toy Story 2.
Toy Story sequels,
franchise.
Those are kind of an anomaly in that those sequels are great.
They
seem to be getting better.
Toy Story 3
was crazy.
Love Toy Story 3.
The toys thought they were going to die.
They were on the brink of hell. They were on the brink of hell before the hand of God came down and lifted them out. They're doing Monsters University, which is a Monsters Inc. prequel, I guess. I'm not sure exactly. They announced Finding
Nemo 2,
which is actually they announced the name and pretty much the plot. What's the name of the Ellen DeGeneres's
Dory?
Finding Dory. They're calling it Finding Dory. And they're also doing. I'm sure they're going to do a Cars 3 and probably Toy Story Wall-E 4. Two. Who knows? Wall-E 2.
Of course.
Ratatouille 2. Actually, I'll see Ratatouille.
I'll see Ratatouille 2.
I'll see Ratatouille. And then they put the 2 in the title.
You've already got the marketing down, Chris. Good job.
That was terrible. So the Croods, I'm really not going to see that.
No, I'm
going
to pass.
I wasn't interested. I like animated movies,
if it comes out on HBO and I got nothing better to do.
Might watch every couple minutes.
It's a sick-day movie.
Exactly.
Sick-day movie, right? Yeah. You're stuck at the house. For some reason, Price is Right isn't on because it got preempted by like a presidential address or something. Damn it. I'll watch it. All right, what else we got?
All right, number two this week, we have Scary Movie 5, which had a weekend gross of $15.1 million. Total gross of the same, budget of $20.
I don't even know what to say about Scary Movie 5.
The first one was... okay, because it was the first time.
I did see the first one in theaters.
I did as well.
So did I. Yeah. It was like the first spoof horror.
This was also, we're talking 97?
Yeah.
Well, this is when we didn't have so many horror parodies.
Yeah.
Where it hasn't been so.
It wasn't so ubiquitous. Exactly. All the jokes have been done.
Exactly.
And now it's just done on the cheap. You know?
On the way cheap. Because even in the first ones, they still had cameos from maybe some of the people from the movies.
Right.
Or, you know, what it, or maybe... you know, a decent star, maybe Beerist or something. The only thing
I find interesting now about the Scary Movie franchise is how the Wayans sold it off to the Xanax, the guys behind the Airplane movies, and they continued on that. So, like, when they did it, I think they did it for Scary Movie 4, either 3 or 4. That's the one that has Leslie Nielsen in it before he passed.
Yeah.
So, you know, they brought in, they started bringing in their people and started doing it their style, which is kind of interesting, I guess, if you're looking for something to talk about in terms of scary movies. I just remember the initial ones being so over the top in terms of like grossness and even like sexual grossness.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Remember like one? I think
some girl got Anna Faris got like
she got blasted
to the ceiling
with gross. Yeah. And I think in one of the Wayans, I think Sean Wayans gets his head impaled with a penis at one point.
Oh,
like,
I know.
It goes through his one ear and out the other.
I caught what the hell? I caught the second one in one of the Wayans brothers gets rolled up and smoked as a joint by a giant weed plant.
Is that the second one?
Yeah.
Which I enjoyed immensely, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Wow.
Genuinely enjoyed?
Okay.
Yeah, but after that, I gave up.
I haven't even paid attention. And they're promoting it hard. Charlie Sheen's on the circuit promoting this movie. Lindsay Lohan was just on David Letterman promoting
really
this.
To show what
how hard they want people to come out and see it because they got nothing.
Exactly.
But also they've got all these has-beens and
right. This is all they could do.
So that's really what it's resorting.
Is Lohan already a has-been?
Yes,
she's
already.
Not even out of her 20s
nope,
yet.
Has-been.
Oh,
has-been.
So sad.
All right, number one this week we have 42, which had a weekend gross of $27.25 million.
Nice.
Total gross of the same, bunch of 40.
Jackie Robinson biopic.
Yes, sir.
Directed by Brian Hegland. Hegland.
Sure.
I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
Whatever you say.
The guy who directed Payback, actually who was fired from Payback by Mel Gibson, and then Mel Gibson directed the rest of the movie.
Payback was all... I liked Payback.
Payback's all right. There's a director's cut where they try to do it closer to Hegland's cut. It's called Payback, the something cut, I don't know. A little more... It just takes away some of the niceness of Mel Gibson's character. Makes him a little more of a bastard. Takes away some of the torture interrogation stuff that Mel Gibson absolutely loves. He puts himself through all that crap.
He loves that shit.
He's a masochist of some sort. That's right, masochist? Yeah, masochist. Yeah. I want to see 42. It looks good.
I want to see it as well.
You know, I think it looks pretty stylish. It's a good story. You know, Jackie Robinson's story is a great story. I love baseball movies.
Yeah.
Harrison Ford's in it as the owner of the Dodgers.
Gained a little weight for the role.
Did he?
Oh,
gain weight? Because he does look a little different.
He looks hefty.
Yeah. Which is, you know, hey, he can afford to.
Oh, dude, he can afford to do whatever he wants.
He can afford to do whatever. Then he has to lose all that weight to play old Han Solo.
Yes.
Because he's confirmed for old Han Solo. They've all confirmed.
I've also heard there may be a Indy 5 in the horizon.
Indy 4 was
no.
so bad.
Please don't. Please don't. You know, Spielberg blames anything you don't like about Indy 4, Spielberg blames it on Lucas.
On really?
Yeah.
Of course. Well,
like
Lucas is a good scapegoat.
He is a good scapegoat, and really, it is Lucas's idea. Indiana Jones has always been his baby. You know, he just let Spielberg direct it because Spielberg's the superior director. Lucas was never really that into directing.
Mm-hmm.
Like the hamster, no, the gophers in the beginning, the hamsters, whatever they were, the prairie dogs in the beginning of Indy 4, he's like, yeah, that's Lucas. All the use of CG and sound stages, like, yeah, that's Lucas. You know, the story, the alien stuff, he's like, Lucas. All that stuff. The delay in making the movie, Frank Darabont wrote a whole script with the crystal skulls and the aliens and all that, and Lucas threw the whole thing out and then rewrote it, but then kept all that stuff anyway. And Darabont was like, what the hell?
What is wrong with you?
Darabont said he would never again take an assignment like that, like a for-hire assignment that could be just scrapped like that because he put so much work into it.
Yeah.
Darabont's a very sensitive fellow. Don't want to, you know. Guy made Shawshank.
He's
a sensitive guy. He's into emotions. I really want to see 42, but you know, with the film festival and then with Place Beyond the Pines and Trans
there's
coming out,
a lot of great films. This is a good time to start seeing some pretty decent films.
And is now the time of the year where the good movies start coming out. January, February, March. Generally. Low time, low tide for movies. Yes. All the crap is still out in the ocean. There's nothing up here on the beach except garbage. But now the water's coming in. We're starting to get our feet wet with some good movies.
Yep.
You know, but I do want to see 42 at some point this week. I'm gonna try to make it out there and see that. All right, so we got new movies coming out on DVD real quick. Actually, not really. The new movies on DVD, it's pathetic. There's some movies called Spies of Warsaw.
I don't care.
Don't even know. No one knows what it is.
Next.
WWE for All Next. Mankind, some sort of WWE home video about Mick Foley's character.
I'm
going to
do on this next.
Hey guys, this is all
next.
That's it. So what's next is what's coming out in theaters.
Well, coming out in theaters this weekend, we have the new Tom Cruise movie, Oblivion.
Which, you know, it's going
to
look great.
It's
going to look awesome, and it has an M83 penned score. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's going
to
sound good, too.
I'm going to keep my knowledge of it a little... Not knowing anything.
There is a big reveal. There is some.
There has to be
giant,
because the trailers don't make any sense.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're hiding something.
Which could be good. They just want to get you into the idea of it.
It could make it worthwhile.
And then slap you in the face with something else.
Which would be cool.
Yeah.
I love the first 45 minutes of Tron Legacy. I love the first 45 minutes.
Yeah.
I think the movie shits the bed after that point. But that was Joe Kaczynski's first film. You know, and this is his second movie. It's his follow-up. And it's based on a graphic novel that he wrote with, like, his brother or something. So
nice. So it's something close to his heart.
Something close to his heart. You know, hopefully...
It's not just the franchise.
Not just a franchise. Hopefully he'll have a better grasp of the story this time around and how to tell the story.
So was it originally a novel or is it just an original screenplay?
It was his original graphic novel.
Okay.
And then he came up with the screenplay based on the graphic novel that he came up with. So he came up with the story and now he's just trying to tell it in a different medium.
Mm-hmm.
The Tom Cruise medium. The medium of Cruise, which I love. The medium of Cruise. I am a Tom Cruise fan. All the craziness aside, I don't care. I'll see a Tom Cruise movie.
Well, of course he in his personal life he's batshit insane. But you put a camera on him and he makes great films.
I just want to see.
But
his
you
movies.
Know how many actors and actresses are batshit?
Oh right,
well, yeah. Oh yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah,
why we
lot.
Love them is because they can turn themselves into someone completely different.
Right.
Yep.
And that's why we love them.
Right. They have to be crazy if you want to be an actor. So, is that it? Anything else?
Also coming out this week, we have the new Rob Zombie movie, The Lords of Salem.
Lords of Salem. This one's supposed to be much less gory. It's not about hyper-violence for the first time with him. This is more along the lines of like the Italian horror of the 70s, where it's all about atmosphere and mood. Kind of a
so
Dario Argento type of feel.
Giallo films.
Yes, exactly. And it's getting mixed reactions from festivals and stuff, you know. A lot of people are digging this new style that Zombie's trying out. Some people just want that House of a Thousand Corpses Rob Zombie.
I'm sick of that.
You know, yeah, I like that he does his thing, and he is very unique, and he has his own voice, and he knows what he wants to do, but, you know, I'm tired of it. I'm ready for him to do something different. So hopefully the Lords of Salem is something different. I also think this is a limited release right now, so might not be available here for a little while. That's just the way it is. Are you a Rob Zombie fan at all in terms of film? Or?
No, not really. I haven't really seen any of his...
You haven't really watched him? Interesting.
I'm also not a big horror fan either. It's not that I'm scared.
Neither am I.
They become so diamond.
Yeah, they are.
It's hard to find a good one.
They're very easy to crank out. A lot of horror fans are happy to find a movie that just has a couple moments that they can latch onto, and then they'll watch a shit movie just for a few moments. And I can't do that so much.
Yeah, I'm the same way. That's why I enjoy South Korean cinema so much. It's just good.
Yeah,
the stories are always there
from start to finish, no matter the genre.
Is worth it. So,
yeah, absolutely. Okay, so not much, nothing on DVD, not too much this weekend except Tom Cruise. So your choices are limited for new stuff, but there's still plenty of other stuff out there. Let's take a quick break. We're going to get into the Crespo Disco.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to play a track. You guys listen to it. I actually referenced the movie already in the first half of the show. I referenced it at some point. So I'll let you know what the song is when we get back, see if you get it right. And then we're going to come back to do the Crespo Dome. It's going to be awesome. So here we go. We're going to take a quick break. Be right back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. This is the second half of episode 14 of Cinema Crespo Disco. I am Christopher Crespo here with Drewster Cogburn.
What up?
And Aaron Weiss from Cinema Funk. How's it going, Aaron?
Doing well.
We're just hanging out, having a good time, talking about movies, doing some podcasting.
Chillaxing.
I know. I'm sorry. I regret saying it this second it left my mouth.
And you give me shit for saying cray. And you want to say chillax.
Yeah.
That was cray, yo. Before we actually, you know what, we'll save that for the end. I'm trying to remember to save plugs for the end of the show.
Yes.
Let's just jump into the Crespo Dome.
Let's do it.
Where anything can happen.
Choose your weapon wisely.
Beware.
You may live. You may die.
I'm a little scared.
I would be.
I wouldn't.
A little bit of fear is good.
It's very chill in the Crespo Dome. Are you the one telling me to beware?
I'll tell you where to be.
I'll tell you where to be. Okay, let me see. I'm going to start out with... We started doing this last week. I'm going to start out right now with the game, Drewster Cogburn versus the World.
We're going to do a
different...
Do this.
Whenever we have a guest, we're going to do a different game every week. And it's Drew versus all the guests. I'm keeping track of the scores. Right now, it's 1-0 Drew.
I'm ready to do battle.
Because we just started.
I'm at 100%.
So, Aaron, you represent the world.
I'm flattered and terrified.
You should be. The weight of it is on your shoulders at this point. Roger Ebert died recently.
Oh, poor Rod.
Rip.
RIP.
Well, he is back with Gene Siskel.
Yes, he is.
They're together in the ether.
Yes, they are.
I found a comic about that, and I used that as my feature.
Oh, really?
Image on my blog post.
Oh, man. Nice. I'm going to have to go back and look at that. That's pretty awesome. Well, since they're back together, I want to talk about movies that they agreed on or disagreed on over the years. I have 10 movies here. These are 10 movies that Gene Siskel, well, Siskel and Ebert, said was the best movie of that particular year. It's up to you to tell me if Ebert agreed. Agree or disagree. That's all okay. You gotta tell me. All
right.
So I got 5 for each of you. And I'm trying to think. I think I'm going to go back and forth on this one. Okay. So, Drewster Cogburn, you won last week. I'm going to give you the option of going first or second.
I'll go first.
Okay.
What about guest goes first? What happened to that?
I'm going with the winners. Winner's outs. Okay. Winner takes the ball out. As a guest, you get to do the Netflix pick of the week. You get subject to the lightning round. You can get a swag bag at the end.
I don't get a swag bag.
We gave you a bottle of water. If it was later in the day, I would have offered you a beer. It's still a little early. And my mom's listening. All right, Drew, you're going first.
Yes, sir.
From 1972, Gene Siskel said The Godfather was the best movie of 1972. Did Roger Ebert agree?
Sure.
You don't sound too confident.
Whatever. Yes. Yes, he
whatever
agrees.
Didn't really make you. Oh, but you're correct.
He agrees.
You're correct. Good job.
That was an easy one.
No, I kind of stood up first one. Be easy. Aaron.
Ready.
1970. What the heck does that say? 1976, I think that says. Or 78. It doesn't matter. Gene Siskel
does matter.
Declared.
I'm
telling you the movie. It's the year Nashville came out because that's the one Gene Siskel said was the best of that year.
Uh-huh.
Did Mr. Ebert agree or disagree? Nashville, best of the year. Robert Altman's Nashville.
Great movie, but I don't think Roger Ebert liked it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like his style, so I'm going to say he did not agree.
Okay, well, Roger Ebert agreed
that
Nashville was the best film of 1970. I'm calling that 78.
Ebert!
Yeah, that's definitely 78. I'm calling it 78.
He got you from the grave, bro.
That's all right. We got more. So here we go. We're going back to you, Drew.
Yes, sir.
From 1976, Gene Siskel declared All the President's Men the best film of the year. Did Roger Ebert agree? Yes or no? All the President's Men.
He disagreed.
That is correct. Roger Ebert declared the film Small Change by Francois Truffaut to be the best film of 1976.
No, right. It is a very good movie.
It is good. Ebert's not a dumb guy. All right, Aaron, number 2 for you from 1981. Siskel said the best film of 1981 was Ragtime. What did Roger Ebert say? Did he agree or disagree?
I think I'm going to go with disagree.
Disagree is correct. Roger Ebert declared My Dinner with Andre the best film of 1981. As we all know, My Dinner with Andre is the famous film in which a film critic went out with Andre the Giant.
And they ate food.
And they ate food together. They closed down the Denny's. Okay, so right now we got 2 for Drew, 1 for Aaron, 3 left for both of you. Drew.
Yes, sir.
1980. Siskel said Martin Scorsese's Raging Bull was the best film of the year. Did either agree or disagree?
He agreed.
That is incorrect.
No.
Roger Ebert declared The Black Stallion the best film of 1980.
Very surprising.
That is a surprising.
Raging Bull's really good.
He wrote a book on him ever since Mean Streets.
Mm-hmm.
Or even, yeah, Mean Streets. There was one where he was like, I love this guy. But no, The Black Stallion, a movie about a kid who is stranded on a desert island with a wild horse. He tames the horse, they get off the island, and then they join some sort of race.
Sweet.
So you got that one wrong. Oh boy.
You have a chance to catch up.
Here's your chance to tie with the 1984 film Siskel said the best film of 1984 was Once Upon a Time in America, the Sergio Leone epic film. Did Roger Ebert agree or disagree?
Gut feeling that he disagreed.
Gut feeling is correct.
Yes.
Roger Ebert said the best film of 84 was Amadeus.
And I agree with that. I enjoyed Amadeus much more than
Great movie. Once Upon a Time. Great movie. So we're tied up at two with two to go. And if you guys tie at the end, just so you know, that's a push. No one gets any points.
Okay.
Because I don't have a tiebreaker. I could have had one, but I didn't do it. So that means there's a push.
What about tie goes to guess?
How about it's a push? Number four, Drew, here we go. From 1983.
The year I was born.
Gene Siskel said the best film of the year was The Right Stuff. The adaptation of the Tom Wolfe book, The Right Stuff. Love that movie. Did Roger Ebert agree or disagree?
Yes, he agreed.
And that is correct. Good job. Aaron, 1988. Ooh, back to Scorsese. Gene Siskel declared The Last Temptation of Christ the best film of 1988. What did Roger Ebert agree or disagree with that?
I know that Ebert had a Catholic upbringing.
Ooh.
I know that Ebert is very open-minded when it comes to stuff like that, okay. So I'm going to say he agreed.
Unfortunately, that is incorrect. Despite the logic, he said Mississippi Burning was the best film of 1988.
Alright.
Okay. It was a good movie. A little white man's guilty, but you know, it's alright. Alright, so at this point, Drew, you have three. Aaron has two. Drew, you could kind of put this one away if you get this one right.
Yes, sir.
I still want to see if Aaron gets the last one, though. So here we go. Drew, from 1998. This was the last time, this was the last film Siskel declared to be a best film of the year before he passed. He said in 1998, best movie of the year was Babe. Pig in the City, the sequel to Babe. Did Roger Ebert agree or disagree? Fantastic movie, Babe. Love it.
I like Babe.
It's really good.
Did not see the second one.
Oh, no. I mean, the second one is like really... first one's good, but that second one's crazy good. It's interesting. George Miller, director of Mad Max. He's good with sequels. Did Ebert agree or disagree?
He disagreed.
That is correct. Roger Ebert said Alex Proyas' Dark City was the best movie of 1998. I would disagree with both of those guys. I can't even tell you what else came out in 98, but I disagree. And Aaron, unfortunately, you're not going to win, but still, let's do the last one anyway, because I wrote it down. From 1989, Gene Siskel said Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing was the best film of 1989. Did Ebert agree or disagree?
I think he agreed.
He did agree. Good job. Right. So you got that one. So three for you, but four for Drewster Cogburn, who once again defeats the world.
I've defeated the world twice now.
Good job.
Congratulations.
Good job, Aaron. You. But well played. Well played, Aaron.
Very well played.
Nice job, Drew.
Good stuff.
Okay.
I'm always quite surprised when I win these things because I have no idea the answers. Well, I am just shooting in the dark here.
I try to use logic, but apparently that doesn't work.
I have no logic.
You got to be careful. You just got to go savant like this guy.
Yeah.
Just make it up as you go along.
Exactly.
Okay, well, in the Crossword Dome, I always get questions so we can have stuff to talk about, different topics to discuss. Let me see. This question, we have a thing going on now where someone suggested a Crespo Dome battle and he gave us a couple of actors and we discussed how they would do in the Crespo Dome. So I got one from a listener named Nick from Tampa.
Uh-huh.
He emailed me at cinemacrespediso@gmail.com. Wanted us to do a Crespo Dome battle between Nicolas Cage and Val Kilmer.
All right, so how we do this is we rank them acting-wise to see who would win in a battle of acting, and then who would actually win in like the Crespo Dome, like with weapons,
in an actual battle.
Okay.
So, what do you think? What do you think of these two actors? Which one, Aaron, would you believe is the stronger actor, Nicolas Cage or Val Kilmer?
I would say that Val Kilmer is a stronger actor,
mm-hmm.
And I think Nicolas Cage would destroy.
in the actual battle.
Yeah, I think so.
Val Kilmer, I think he can reach down and give you a more honest performance, you know, more of a natural performance, especially, you know, back in the day, back in the 90s, around Heat, stuff like that. But Nick Cage, man, he does that mega acting.
He does that Nick Cage look.
If I see a movie where he doesn't go mega, like Season of the Witch, that awful Season of the Witch movie, which is really just awful because he was so subdued the whole time. It was like he was on Xanny bars.
Or Valium.
Yes. I want his eyes bugging out. I want over the top Nick Cage, you know, because that's the yeah. Nick Cage. He's been cast in Expendables 3, I believe, as the villain.
That's awesome.
That's going to be fantastic.
I love Nick Cage as a villain.
That should be mega actor Nick Cage. Like Wicker Man, how he's over the top, you know, it's like the bees, and he's drop kicking ladies in the face. I like that Nick Cage. I don't see Val Kilmer.
He doesn't get like that now.
Val Kilmer doesn't go over the top like that. He does interesting stuff. He played, wasn't he Elvis in True Romance?
Yes.
Like you never see his face, but,
no, but
I mean,
yeah.
He was Elvis though.
I really enjoyed him in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Oh, he was amazing. Fantastic.
When I think Val Kilmer, that's like the first movie that pops into my head.
Absolutely.
Oh no way. I'm sorry. First movie pops in the head. Top Gun.
Oh yeah, you go with the Top Gun
every time.
Yeah, that was one of his. Because that was right after he did, what was that one? Top Secret? I think he did Top Secret.
It was either that or Real Genius.
Real Genius. Genius. Yes, that's what like people are like, whoa, who's this Val Kilmer guy?
Yeah.
Then he got Top Gun that kind of shot him up there into and sort of movie star. He never really broke through, though, as like the movie star. He was always kind of a sub-level.
He was never really good. He wasn't that great in the Batman movies. That movie, The Saint.
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah, he had that run in the 90s where he tried the mainstream stuff, and it didn't really work out too hot for him. But then, you know, Kiss Kiss Bang, I don't know. I would say now that's like, I'd point to that movie as that's his best. Nick Cage, on the other hand, Leaving Las Vegas.
Adaptation,
fantastic. He was nominated for that, right? Leaving Las Vegas, he won an Academy Award. I think Adaptation might have been nominated.
I think he was nominated.
I think he has more accolades than Val Kilmer does.
That's true.
You know,
but you can't always judge someone. That,
no,
these
no, true that.
Stanley Kubrick awards. Never won a single award. He's one of the greatest directors ever. So that's absolutely very true. I'm on the fence on this one, but with the mega acting and with the fact that he has the balls to follow up an award win with The Rock and Con Air, he's like, now I'm going to be a stupid action star. I'm going to give it to Nick Cage for the acting, but just by a hair. Just by a hair. How about you?
Nick Cage all the way.
I'm going
all the way around.
I guess you're just not a Val Kilmer fan.
It's not that I'm not a Val Kilmer fan. It's just I think Nick Cage is
more interesting.
I think he's a better personality. I think he's a more talented actor.
Okay.
And I think he can whoop his ass as well.
He's also been a wider variety of films.
Yeah.
And he has, because now he's so broke, he's just whatever.
That's the thing. He has his massive tax bills where he has like 14 movies slated to come out in the next year and a half, and I guarantee you 13 of them are going to be garbage.
Oh yeah,
because he's making them just for the money, you know, which is it's sad, but you know.
But hey, got to pay the bills.
He does have to pay those IRS bills
and the lawyer bills,
and those are even more. Okay, so Drew and I are going with Nick Cage for the acting. You're going with Val Kilmer, but it seems like there's some wiggle room both ways.
Yeah.
But we're all going Nick Cage for the actual fighting.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
I think
he's just in better shape.
Yeah.
Val Kilmer, he balloons, his weight goes
I'm
up,
sorry,
goes down.
The way I see it.
Sometimes looks like Marlon Brando.
Nick Cage and Con Air could whoop Val Kilmer as Batman.
But we're doing now. If these guys stepped into the dome
right
today.
Now, even right now.
We're doing that.
I'm pretty sure Nick Cage is just crazy enough. You know, crazy guys fight crazy.
Yeah. I mean, just
and he's skinny.
Just look at Protocol, New Orleans.
Yes,
exactly.
I mean,
love that movie. Werner Herzog.
Werner Herzog is so great.
Man, what a wild movie that is. What a wild, wild movie. Thank you, Nick from Tampa. I think that was a constructive Crespo Dome battle analysis. So we'll try to get these guys together in Crespo Dome scenes. Okay, you know what? Okay, actually, we'll do this one first. At Sir Kyle on Twitter, he had a question for the Crespo Dome and then another question for the lightning round. But I choose the lightning round question. So I'm going to use them both for this section here. So they're going to be for everyone. First off, piggybacking on our conversation last week about film scores and how they affect the movie industry.
Yeah.
Sir Kyle wants us to talk about our favorite composers.
Oh, okay.
So, Aaron, do you have any go-to composers, people that you really, really like to hear music from in movies these days?
One of the more recent, or he's working so much right now, is Alexandre Desplat.
Yeah.
One of the first times I heard his score was in a movie called The Legion Defense, and that was like, I think 2000 or 1999.
Okay.
And I was like, this is such a very haunting score.
Yeah.
And then as I've gotten older and I've seen more of these films, he's attached to a lot of the big films of the year.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so
he does seem to be like a prestige composer where if you want something that has like an award winning score ready to go, he's the guy to go to for that.
I don't know if he's John Williams though.
Oh, Johnny Williams, he's like Spielberg. He knows how to reflect those emotions and to tell you this is exactly what you need to feel at this moment in the movie.
I totally agree with that. Like when I was watching War Horse, I was just like, well, if you're not sure what to think of the movie, the score will
listen to the score. Yeah, it's freaking John Williams. Come on.
If you don't know if you're supposed to be sad, listen, is there a violin playing right now?
Be sad.
But, I mean, I love Johnny Williams.
Johnny Williams,
definitely like a wall-to-wall music guy, and he's gonna, it's just out there. He's... The subtext becomes text with him, I love Clint Mansell.
Yeah, I was just about to say.
Fountain soundtrack. Yeah. His name pops up surprisingly a lot on films that you wouldn't expect.
Yeah.
It's not like he only does Aronofsky movies,
But he does to all the Aronofsky movies.
Yeah, but he does. Yeah. Cliff Martinez, who did the Solaris soundtrack, the Contagion soundtrack, stuff like that. He's another guy whose name pops up a lot. The Drive soundtrack. He did a lot of that stuff.
Okay.
This dude, his name is Holmes, David Holmes. He did all the Ocean's 11, Ocean's 12, all that really funky, jazzy stuff. He's also the guy behind Free Association.
Oh, okay. With the Code 46 soundtrack.
Yeah. Yeah, which is also... Did you ever see that movie, Code 46?
No, I did not.
Really good.
Fantastic Michael Winterbottom movie with Tim Robbins and Samantha Morton. It's kind of like a set in the future a little bit. A love story, a forbidden love story type of deal. Great, great soundtrack.
Code 46.
That's on the Netflix Instant. I really highly recommend that one. That's a great, great movie. Great score. That's a score that I listen to all the time. Australians. Nick Cave and Warren Ellis.
Oh, yeah.
All right, I mean, Nick Cave is already a musician. Yes. Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. They've been around forever. But he did scores for John Hillcoat's movies, A Proposition, and... I think he even did a score for The Road. And then Andrew Dominik, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward of Robert Ford.
He also did the more recent one, Lawless, I think it was.
Yes, he did.
Yes,
he did the Lawless
which
score.
Which I believe he also did the screenplay. I vaguely familiar. Yeah.
As a matter of fact, he wrote The Proposition and Lawless for John Hillcoat. They're buddies of some sort, so they're all so working together.
Yeah.
He might have even given him The Road to do a pass on, even though it's based on a Cormac McCarthy book. Nick Cave and Warren Ellis, those guys, they work great, great together. They do some beautiful, beautiful music. There's a lot of great film stuff out there. Did I mention what was playing in the Crestwood Disco? I never did.
No.
I? But if you recognize it, it's pretty obvious because it was Daft Punk's Tron Legacy score. The actual track was, what's the name of it? The Game Has Changed, which is one of the more bombastic tracks, one of the longer tracks in there. It actually sounds like a song as opposed to just like a minute and a half of music cues. But it's still, that's another great soundtrack where people were expecting Daft Punk. Like, well, all right, French electronic duo. What are they going to do with the score? And then Daft Punk brings in a 60-piece orchestra.
Yeah.
And they're like, we're going to give you a real film score. Yeah, what do you expect? What do you expect? We give you a film score.
You want film score? Project. We give you film score.
There you go. Those are some guys I really like now. Don't we miss anyone? Mark Mothersbaugh of Devo.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
He does a lot of the, he did a lot of the Wes Anderson stuff. Desplat did Moonrise Kingdom.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. He might even be doing The Great Budapest Hotel.
Yeah.
They might have swapped him out. Poor Mothersbaugh. Poor guy. Whip it, buddy.
Poor guy.
He's getting work in commercials, though. I hear he's getting down commercials. And makes me... Oh, John Bryan.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
The iHeart Huckabee soundtrack.
iHeart Huckabee's
Eternal Sunshine.
Eternal Sunshine. Anything that sounds like kind of sad but poppy at the same time. Punch Drunk Love, absolutely. Yep. Anything that sounds sad but happy at the same time is John Bryan.
And it's really good.
And he's another guy who's like, I'm watching TV and like, is this Apple commercial of a John Bryan song?
Yes,
like,
it is.
I guess these guys got to eat.
They
got to eat, poor guys.
They got bills to pay.
So there's plenty of great, great people out there making music. David Julian did the first few Christopher Nolan soundtracks that I liked a lot. I think the last Nolan movie he did was The Prestige,
which was great.
Great soundtrack. Great, great soundtrack. So, all right, here we go. Thank you, Sir Kyle. Actually, and then Sir Kyle's other question that he wanted for the lightning round, but I'm going to use it right now. Give us a traditional deserted island question. You're on an island. You only have 3 movies. What are those movies? Drew just made a face like, oh my goodness, Aaron's already deep in thought. I'll go ahead and say my 3 movies are going to be The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly, the 3-hour director's cut, because it's very long, very detailed, and I love it. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. Die Hard, because again, one of my favorite movies. I've watched it so many times by now. If I'm not sick of it by now, I'm never going to be sick of it. So I can watch that on a deserted island. And third movie, I'm going to go with Rocky, because it's life-affirming, but it still has that 70s anti-hero thing where he's a bum, he's a leg breaker, but then he makes good. But he doesn't win at the end. He loses the fight, but he still wins. Oh, almost a perfect movie, Rocky. So, all right, those are my three Desert Island movies, which are pretty much just three of my favorite movies of all time. Mm-hmm. What do you got?
I'd be using the same, you know...
Same criteria?
Yeah, basically my favorite movies. It'd probably be Royal Tenenbaums.
Oh, so good. So good. What are you looking at, Coltrane? Who you calling Coltrane?
I mean, these are films I've already probably watched, that I used to watch almost on a monthly basis.
Right, yeah.
Tenenbaums, Big Lebowski.
Love it.
These are films that I could watch over and over again, just something new
every
time.
Yeah.
And the third one, you know, I'm going to stray away from my favorite and go to something that I can, if I'm on an island, I can sort of relate to. I'd probably go with Castaway.
Nice.
Might as well, right?
That's funny.
Let's see how another guy
I like that.
Does it.
Yeah. I like nice. That. All right. And Drew?
I'm going to go with, probably I Heart Huckabees, just kind of to keep me sane while I'm there.
To contemplate nothingness to somethingness.
Exactly.
Okay.
Princess Mononoke. I'm not sure if anybody knows anything about old anime from the 90s, but it's...
So Miyazaki.
That's a very interesting
It's a really good movie.
It is a very good movie.
Every time I watch it, I remember how good it is, and even so, like, I've seen movies that have even referenced Princess Mononoke.
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, it's great. I've always been a big fan of animation, so I was trying to get some anime.
Word.
And then Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Ah, fantastic.
It's it's a classic. There's a lot in there. It's funny, it's happy, it's sad, it's a crazy trip.
It's got it all.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, those are nine good movies right there that if the three of us are stuck on an island together, I think we have a pretty good little DVD collection. Mm-hmm. Sir Kyle didn't mention if we had a DVD player or a way to watch these movies.
But,
so I guess we're just sitting around looking at the DVDs and the artwork and stuff and talking about how much we like them.
Exactly.
So that's good enough. Every week, you know this guy, Aaron, every week we get a question from Billy D.
Yes.
Good old Billy D.
Good old
D.
Bill.
This is episode 14, so this is question 14 from Billy. He writes, "Hey Chief, would you kindly tell us what long gestating video game adaptation we are likely to see first, Halo or Bioshock? No gods or giants, only Cortana, Billy D." So I guess with that reference, he's hoping for a Halo movie more than anything
else.
Well,
I mean, I've been hearing about, you know, Peter Jackson doing a Halo movie forever.
Well, that died on the branch a long time ago because they were talking about wanting to make a $150 Halo movie, but they were giving it to Neil Blomkamp, the guy who did District 9. Universal and Fox were co-producing it. That's how badly they wanted to make it. But then when Jackson came at them with a huge budget and an untested director, they were like, nope, pulling that plug. This ain't happening. And then, what's his name? Bungie, the company behind Halo, they really want a quality movie, so they stick their fingers into it a lot, too, and I don't know. I think a Bioshock movie has more chance of being made, just because
Bungie
is much
used
more...
to do Halo. Bungie doesn't do Halo 4.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Well, it all depends on the current rights holders. I would even want to see a Halo movie or a Bioshock movie. I guess I'd be down for a Halo movie.
I mean, it all depends on... I mean, the whole Bioshock thing's always been pretty crazy. I just don't know how that would...
Bioshock is just Ayn Rand underwater.
Well, like I said, I would think the Bioshock thing would transfer into more of like... Resident Evil type movies. Like, it would turn into one of those crappy
Silent Hill
Resident Evil type movies because of the, you know, the fantasy and the horror.
They would want to stick with the aesthetics.
Exactly. And then it turns into that kind of movie.
Yeah.
See, I actually don't play video games, so I don't know very much about it, but have heard a lot of, I know Bioshock 4 just came out.
Bioshock Infinite.
Yeah.
Infinite.
Yeah, I think it's the fourth one. Yeah.
And so I've been... That sounds a little more... I've heard more of Halo.
Well, yeah, the Bioshock storylines are more interesting. It's about us. The first one, anyway, is about us. Someone built an underwater city, and it's all Art Deco. Like, that's the time period they built it. But it's all about free reign. People can do whatever they want. Genetic modification went crazy down there, and then all of a sudden everyone just went nuts, and it became like a hellhole that you get stranded in. And it's a pretty interesting story.
So it's a capitalist yeah. Wasteland.
Yes.
It's, like he said, Ayn Rand Underwater.
Yeah, it's Ayn Rand Underwater. And then I haven't played the sequel game, so I don't know where the story goes. But it could make an interesting story. Halo is just space battles, space marines. Yeah,
see, I'd rather see something like BioShock.
I think story-wise, I would rather see what BioShock has to offer, but in the reality of the movie that's going to be made, I think Drew's right. If they make a BioShock movie, it's going to be it's going to be like a Resident Evil. Like, really, it's not going to be very good. That just they'll take all the stuff that they think is cool, and they'll try to make a cool movie instead of all the stuff that's actually, you know, has something about society and it's interesting to take that out. Halo is more straightforward. Space Marines battling these aliens. They already have a lot of great imagery in the game that can make for great cinematic imagery. If you just check out the commercials, Neil Blomkamp, if you look at, go to YouTube and look up Halo 3 commercial.
Yeah.
And he has a series of Halo 3 commercials where it looks like District 9, but with Halo stuff.
It's good.
It's very, very, very good. He would have made a great, great Halo movie. And the guy who did Snow White and the Huntsman. What's his name? British guy, Rupert something.
I don't know.
Rupert something. He did a commercial for Halo ODST. And his looks different than Blomkamp's. It doesn't look like District 9. It looks more like Snow White and the Huntsman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it looks great. Like, it looks like I would see a Halo movie by this guy, too.
Exactly.
You know? So there's room there for that. But in the end, there has never been a good video game movie, and there's nothing to indicate right now that there will be one.
Correct.
Yeah.
They've all been terrible. All right, we need to wrap this up here. So there's two quick things we want to do with you, Aaron. First, you got to go through the lightning round.
Okay.
The lightning round is here. I'm going to give you 10 quick questions.
Okay.
And then you just have to, you know, first thing that comes to mind, you're going to answer them. And then we're
like the scene in Bond?
Yes.
Skyfall. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. Skyfall. And then I say it over and over, and then you're just like, done. And then you walk away all pissed off. Yes. Here we go. So 1 through 10. I am timing you, but that has no bearing on anything.
Okay.
Number 1, the auteur theory, true or false, in 10 words or less.
I've studied this a lot.
That's 4 words.
6 more to go.
Yes and no.
Okay. You got 3 words left.
It's complicated.
Got one left. You want to use it?
Nah.
There we go.
10 words.
But it's strange because...
Yep. 10 words or less.
Lightning round.
Number 2. Quentin Tarantino, artist or thief?
Does this have to be in the 10 words?
No.
Okay. Pick,
not supposed to
pick artist or pick thief.
Some great artists are thieves.
Oh.
So I'm going to go with artist.
Okay, very good. Number 3. What is the next Facebook?
CinemaPunk.com.
Ah, number 4. Do you have any pets?
Not anymore.
Aww.
I had guinea pigs, and almost about a year ago, I had to put down my last one, Colbert. Put down Colbert to guinea pig. I missed them.
That's so bummer. Number 5. What number am I thinking?
7.
Number 6. Finish this line. The stars at night are big and bright.
That's amore?
That's amore. Number 7. What is the most impressive thing you've ever seen?
The space shuttle launch at night.
Ooh. Number 8. You are walking in the woods. You see an animal. What animal do you see?
Chupacabra.
Oh, the goat sucker.
Number 9. Why do you write film reviews in 5 words or less?
If I don't, I'll explode.
Oh, okay. And number 10, final question. Senoritas or senioritis?
Senoritas.
Senoritas. Good job. All right, there you go. That's the lightning round. Very interesting. Very interesting questions.
Good stuff.
Just to review a couple things real quick, the number I was thinking of was 722.4.
Oh,
so you got the 7.
So, yeah. Well, I got the 7. I was thinking single digits.
Oh, yeah, I never specified. And the stars at night are big and bright. Deep in the heart of Texas. Anyone? No, it's a song. It's an old popular song. I know it more from Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah, Pee-wee.
That's how he proves this in Texas. Yes. Over the phone. So yeah, that's a lightning round. I think we learned a lot of very interesting stuff about you, Aaron. Thank you very much. Before we send you out the door, if you look over to your left, You will see four bags over there. Those are the Crespo Diso swag bags, where we give away a bag to each of our guests.
Full of stuff,
because that's how generous we are on the show.
Yep.
So go ahead and pick a bag at random and hand it to me so I can break it out for people and let them know what you're getting. Yeah. Oh, very nice. Nice choice. Feels heavy? Uh-oh.
Green because purple's just not my color.
All right.
I like to lose a nice heavy bag. So let's see what Aaron gets here.
You're going home with.
You are going home with a DVD copy of Rain Over Me, the Adam Sandler Don Cheadle 9/11 drama.
Fantastic.
So enjoy that. There you go. Yay. Go ahead and look at that there.
Never seen it.
Oh, well, now you've got a chance. Flip 'em, trade 'em, crazy jumping beans. It's a 4-pack. It says it's a 4-pack, but there's only 3 in here. There's supposed to be jumping beans of some sort that somehow jump around. I don't understand them. There you go.
I'm interested. I jumping beans. Huh?
This is a packed bag. You get a bottle of bubbles. You can blow some bubbles there.
Niece is gonna love this.
Your niece is gonna love that one. What do we got here? Oh, the growing animal dinosaur egg. Surprise, amazing. Do not swallow. Put this egg in some water and a dinosaur will come out.
My niece will also like that.
And your niece is going to love some Flarp brand noise putty. Do not eat. Recommended for ages 3 and up.
Well, I'm definitely keeping that.
Warning, keep away from the heat. It's noise putty. You pop the top, so you squeeze it.
And it makes fart noises.
So keep away from heat, so I'm... We're in Florida. Is that
probably going to have an issue.
Could be a bad thing. And here you go. A bar of peppermint bath bar soap.
I could have used that at the beginning
like,
of...
Smells like peppermint.
At the beginning of the week?
At the beginning of the film fest?
Yeah, when I was sleeping on a couch.
And finally, last but not least, you got a semi-crust bonito sticker.
Ooh.
Everyone gets a sticker.
That's going everywhere around Dalrico.
There you go, sir. That's your Crespo Diso swag bag.
Much.
So many wonderful things for a grand total of about somewhere between $6 and $8. We'll call it $7.
Oh, yeah.
So there you go. That was episode 14. Aaron, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Let's do some plugs now. Let people know where they can find you. First, actually, you got your own podcast coming up soon.
Yes, I'm going to be expanding some of the functions just a tad bit. I'm going to be starting a podcast where really the idea is to start getting in touch with people who have stories to tell about filmmaking or just media or even scholarly.
Some more behind the scenes stuff.
Behind the scenes as well as issues. Think Freakonomics.
Yeah.
And maybe This American Life.
Okay.
With the cinema.
Nice.
Okay,
and
nice.
So it's probably not going to be weekly. I'm not exactly sure what the time span is going to be, but it's going to be whenever I have a great show.
Okay.
That's when I'm going to go.
So maybe bi-weekly, monthly, something like that. There are a lot of podcasts that do that. They just try to put together the show first. And they don't
exactly.
try to adhere to the schedule.
I'm not going to be constrained by time.
Oh, that's good. Good for you, dude. So. Do you have an idea? Are you just going to call it the Cinema Funk Podcast? Or?
I think for the time being, just Cinema Funk Podcast. Make it really simple.
Yeah.
And focus really on the stories.
Branding, keep everything together in one umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. And then you also got the website.
I got the website, cinemafunk.com.
Right. Are you the only, you're not the only writer there, right? You have other
writers?
Right
now, I'm like the primary
You're the main writer.
But I have a few people who write for me every once in a while.
Nice.
Got one guy in the UK, so he sees a few things. Like, he already did a review of Trance, and got something else coming up for him a little later in the week.
Very good.
And, cinemafunk.com.
Mm-hmm.
And
Twitter?
I'm on Twitter at cinemafunk. You can find me on Facebook, and if you just type in Cinema Funk or into Google, you'll probably find me.
Google is your best friend, people, right?
If it's not on Google, it doesn't exist.
Exactly. If it's on the iTunes, it doesn't exist either. Remember that when you get the podcast going. Make sure it's up there. We're on the iTunes, so don't forget to rate and review us 5 stars. Hope you enjoyed this episode. That was episode 14. Thank you very much, Drewster Cogburn.
You're very welcome.
Thank you very much, Aaron Weiss.
Thank you very much for having
me. I am Christopher Crespo. This was a wonderful show. You were a wonderful listener, and we'll see you next week for episode 15. Thank you very much.
Can I beatbox inside and up?
Yeah. Crespo Diso. It's the cinema of the Crespo Diso. It's the cinema. I'm Chris Crespo. What? 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 And we're out.
Huh? ¿Qué?